Okay, we are nearing the end of the review of this book, Basic Principles of the Science of Mind. And I don't know about you, but if any of you have been following along, other than Connie and Mary Roberts, I found it very, very helpful. He's a very structured kind of guy, and he's inspired me to do more reading in Troward. And I think this is a good book. If you ever want to pick it up and work your way through it, it's a good book to do that with. So today we're going to we're working on the last chapter, which is healing consciousness. And again, what is? Oh, that's recording. I thought it was my phone I'd left there. Okay. Yes. Okay. So I'm going to just talk about the first part of the chapter, and today we're going to understand what consciousness is, and we're also going to, he gives you some methods for making progress and cultivating that consciousness, including being aware of some things that you may want to start avoiding in your day-to-day life. So as soon as I started thinking about this topic, of course, my life started rearranging itself around the topic. And I don't know if you know this, but at this time of year, we have what's called open season in the health insurance industry. And so there are all kinds of ads in the metro stations. And I got off the metro one morning, and I saw this sign that said, I thought it said, fearless is owning your own head. You're owning your head. And actually, it was owning your health. But I thought, well, really, consciousness is owning your head. When you think about it, it's about taking deliberate control of your thoughts. And so anyhow, I just kept playing with that. And the more I thought about it, the more it made sense to me, especially in light of the things I'm going to talk about in a minute. And I also, the other thing that came to mind, and I kept thinking about it, and it's certainly up right now, is the subject of consciousness raising, which certainly we knew about in the late 60s when feminist groups got together and talked about, bringing attention to women's issues. And, of course, it's taken on a broader definition with things like AIDS, disease control, conflicts, and you name it. And so we do have a lot of consciousness raising going on. When you think about the Occupy movement, that really was a consciousness raising movement. So all of this was going through my head, and it kind of made getting this talk together even more entertaining for me.
Good word.
I always love it when I get other signs, on the topic that I'm preparing to discuss. And of course, if you look in the dictionary, consciousness is the quality of being awake and aware of your surroundings. So, what is consciousness? Well, it depends on what your concept of God is at any given moment. It can vary from hour to hour, moment to moment, depending on whether or not you're owning your head. So, if you have a high state of consciousness, you are partaking more and more of the qualities of spirit, which we was thinking about our first year in the study group back in 2002. We talked about the qualities of God, and some of them are peace, harmony, bliss, love, flow, abundance. And so I thought about that, and I thought, wow, that's a really interesting way to put it, owning our head, embodying those qualities of God. So Bales goes on to talk about how to get there, and there's some behaviors that we may want to avoid. The first one is to remove hostilities from our life. Yes. Mm-hmm. So there's enough hostility going on in the world. We don't really need to discuss it right now, but let's just take the example of somebody you might meet that, say, has a big wart at the end of their nose. And that when we see them, that's all we can see is that big wart. And we judge them, and we think about them. But really, it doesn't mean that they're any different as a human being. The same is true with a person who may have some kind of mental deformity or issues. And if you think about it, somebody, for instance, who has a problem with, you know, he may be mentally ill or something like that, that, you know, it's just kind of like that wart in the end of your nose. It's kind of there, but deep down inside, there's this presence of perfection, of divine being. And so it's up to us, when we own our head, to see through that and to see the perfection that lies within them. So the more you're able to do that, I think the more that you will develop your own sense of healing consciousness. Now, I've spent a lot of time around people that are severely mentally ill, and I can tell you that if you look hard enough, you can see that, you can sense that when you're around them, that there's this part of them that is precious, loving, peaceful, and it's just wonderful being around them. So it's possible to do that with anybody. So, and as we do that, as we recognize the perfection in other people, we recognize that we are, in a way, all one. Like, I know when I sit down and talk to John for about 5 minutes, I'm starting to feel that connection with him. Mm-hmm. I start to feel that oneness. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I with you.
Yeah. And I mean, it's just amazing how that works. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to feel it in this room right now, as a matter of fact, that connection between all of us. So moving down the line, let's drop some self-pity while we're at it. And now we're all advanced enough in our spiritual practices to know that what we think about starts manifesting. And so feeling sorry for ourselves is really counterproductive. Once we start to look at life as perhaps offering multiple possibilities, and perhaps whatever you're feeling self-pity about could actually be the best possible thing that could happen to you, then we start to change inside, and then people start to change in the way that they treat us. And so we recognize that perhaps self-pity is rather self-defeating. So Bales himself says that sensitiveness and self-pity are signs of emotional immaturity. I thought that was funny. Emotional immaturity, because I think of myself as pretty emotionally immature sometimes. And the person who pities himself can never take more than a few steps beyond his front door to find someone giving him a look or a word which confirms his false belief that the world is against him. So next, the next thing to drop is negative discussion. We got to cut the gossiping out. Not that you guys do it at all, but that's another step in the process of kind of the things you can leave behind that help you to build your consciousness at a higher level. So, you know, for instance, if a friend of yours is going through a divorce or something like that, taking sides really doesn't help either person. It's important to listen and kind of let it flow through you and let it go. And then I started thinking about, okay, negative discussions. I've been in situations at work where I've had a boss that, let's just say I was ready to move on. I've had bosses that made me want to move on. And, you know, I think about it. Now looking at it from the other side, I realize that if they hadn't been the way they were, it was a blessing to me because I was ready to move on. And because of their actions, I could feel that impulse to move, change jobs, and when otherwise I would probably stay in the longer. And the same might be true with a relationship. So think about situations you've been in for a prolonged period of time, whether it's with a mate, a child, a neighbor, boss, that you feel like drive you crazy,
house.
Well, I don't think you can gossip about your house.
No, but it can tell you to move on.
It can tell you to move on. So that's realizing that it does, you know, it kind of lowers you to be in a place where you're discussing in a negative way other person's frailties. It's not the way you want to go. So, of course, we're always blessed. Next, he talks about what we want to do. And if being conscious means that you're awake and aware of your surroundings, you can the quickest way to develop that higher level of consciousness, of course, is to realize that we can be in union with all that is at all times. And he gives us some markers of progress. he talks about, for instance, recognition of that inward compulsion to seek out union with all that is. And I think all of us have felt it, if we don't feel it on an ongoing basis, but that sense that there's something else out there that you want to connect with. You may walk into a place that's an energy vortex, or perhaps a spiritual building, or any place, you can get there, but you feel that sense of being with something greater than you normally are. And that's that desire that we have within all of us. With some people, it may have been, they may have been exposed to some kind of religion that kind of wore that out of them, so they may not be as aware of it. But I think most of us in this room right now do feel that sense of wanting to connect with all that is, because we recognize that that is also within us. And it's kind of akin, when you think about it, to a plant that's looking for the sun. It may move. Second is the willingness to cooperate and respond to all that is, so that when you're living in a house that's falling out, having some issues, maybe you've got some foundational problems. we can recognize that this is actually a perfect situation, and that that, as Helen Keller talked about it, she said, when a door closes, we have a choice. We can stand and look at that door, and look at it, and look at it, and never see the doors behind us that are opening up. Apparently Ed's done that because he's moved on. So once you realize that a door closing is actually an opportunity, we allow God to work through us and start moving in a different direction in our lives. And it's important at this point, when a door closes, to avoid the pity parties. And I recognize that there are moments in our lives when things happen that are so difficult to bear that we need time to adjust. But that's different from a pity party. But that's taking the time perhaps to mourn or to seek out a deeper connection within before you feel that you can go out and be with other people. Certainly there's a big difference there. Another milestone would be a growing awareness of unity, the unity of all things. And that means that, once we start to see that, we can seek that perfection in everything. And while a negative experience may happen and it may appear to be real, the truth is that the practitioner of this philosophy denies the reality of this negative experience and says it's all perfect. And eventually it is. And lastly, I love this one, rising in thought. And he talks about God being a projecting beam of perfect thinking throughout the universe. And so I think of perhaps maybe a beam of rainbow-colored lights. And this beam can't be lowered to anything that's less than perfect. So our purpose as we live is to raise the level of our thinking so that we are at the height of that beam, so we're in that flow. And if we're wallowing in hatred, pettiness, self-pity, we're gossiping a lot, then our beam of thought is below the beam of God's perfection. So Bale says that God can be found in the beauty of a sunset, in the petals of a flower, in the planting of a garden, or in the laughter of children. Close. Yes, exactly. I wanted to close with the treatment that he has at the end of this. By the way, there's a test at the back of the book if you guys want to take it. Yeah. You can get out your pencils. So here's a treatment for general good. This day I face toward the dawn of the infinite healing presence. I recognize it like the sun coming over the hills in an ever-growing sense of warmth, light, and life. As I share the sun's rays by placing myself where they can play freely upon me, so I now place myself in the attitude of receptiveness to the infinite healing presence whose activity I welcome. I bathe my consciousness in its steady, serene, healing rays. I relinquish all personal struggle and effort, allowing myself to be played upon by that which is bringing healing and fulfillment in its invisible rays. And it is so. And so it is.
Thank you.